Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Last week was perhaps the most eventful week for financial markets all year. The election finally happened and it was certainly market moving, but there was also a Fed meeting and a significant policy meeting in China. So joining us today to discuss this all, glad to welcome back Jason Draho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning to begin another trading week. A lot to catch up on since we last spoke a week ago from today. So looking forward to our conversation. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here for another week.
So, Jason, let's begin with the market reaction to the election. What are your thoughts on the momentum in markets we have been seeing? And does the Trump trade have more room to go?
Well, it was certainly a very strong market reaction on Wednesday. I think the clarity by even Tuesday night around 11 p.m. when it became sort of clear the direction of travel for the outcome with Trump, you know, winning, I think, relatively decisively, it gave investors sort of confidence to move pretty aggressively on Wednesday. And that's how the market performed on Wednesday. And they liked what they saw in terms of a red sweep and what that means in terms of policy. It was definitely a Trump trade, at least for Wednesday. And to me, the big notable action on Wednesday was the reduction in volatility. So the VIX index for equity volatility, the MOVE index for treasury volatility, were both down about 20% by early Wednesday morning. Yeah, this by having kind of clarity, you know, right away, you know, a lot of investors may take off hedges that they had put on, give investors more confidence in terms of the path going forward. So that was kind of a notable move. But you know, on Wednesday itself, the S&P 500 was up 2.5%, and led by cyclicals, like small caps up over 5%, same thing with financials. Treasury yield up across kind of the whole curve of between like 8 and 17 basis points. And the U.S. dollar was up, you know, 1.5%. You know, these are all attributes of the Trump trade, you know, which to me is really another way, you know, described it. It's a reflation trade, whereas investors are sort of upgrading their expectations for growth and inflation, you know, due to various policy measures relative to their baseline expectations. And when you get that sort of reflation, you know, outlook, you're changing. That's what we see in terms of the you know, yield higher, dollar higher, kind of the more cyclical parts of the equity markets also higher. The rest of the week after Wednesday was a little bit calmer. And so the S&P of 100 continued to grind higher, but we saw actually yields decline or retrace about 75% of the move, about you know, 12 basis points of the, you know, of the about 16 basis point move for the 10-year yield higher. U.S. dollar was a little bit more choppy. If we look at the Trump trade overall, you know, going back to September when the probability at least the markets, you know, expectations of him winning started to rise. You take that from late September, mid-September through the end of last week, and you look at the total performance of things like treasury yields, the dollar, in different parts of the equity market. It's similar to what happened in 2016 from the election day onwards through the end of the year. So since the market started to price it earlier, I think that's kind of a roughly fair, almost two months comparison, and we can see kind of you know, similar degrees of moves this time versus last time. The one thing that's relevant this time is starting kind of in mid, late September as the economic data started to get much better. So some of the moves we've seen in terms of higher yields, a stronger dollar, higher equities reflects just better economic fundamentals and not just purely a Trump trade, but you know the overall magnitude is somewhat similar, which then suggests that you know, to get the next stage or continuation of this trade, we're going to need to see now not just the outcome of the election, but the specific more details on the policy front, you know, such as who is going to be the policymakers? Because oftentimes, you know, it's personnel as policies and sort of an old saying. So who does Trump appoint or nominate to be Treasury Secretary, Trade Secretary, things of that sort. You know, someone who's more, you know, market friendly might again lead to a more continuation of the Trump trade. Then there's a sequencing of policy. Back in 2016, 17, 18, you know, the lead off was with, you know, tax reform and tax cuts. That was the story for 2017, and they took effect at the beginning of 2018. Only then was the focus shifted to, you know, increasing tariffs. Will it be the same order this time, or will it be kind of reversed? I mean, these are kind of open questions, and depending on the sequencing, that will have market implications because, generally speaking, resolving tax increases or maintaining tax cuts will be viewed favorably. Raising tariffs and the uncertainty around them is going to be viewed negatively. And then there's just the overall scope of fiscal policy. How much will they, you know, extend the tax cuts? Will there be additional fiscal spending, additional tax cuts? You know, as these details come in, this could further lengthen that Trump trade, or it could ultimately kind of, you know, bring it to an end. So this remains to be seen. So there's probably a little more scope for rooming to run, but you know, at this point, it's sort of the devil's in the details, and we need to sort of know more before the markets really make significant moves one way or another.
That covers the markets. If we now turn to the economy, Jason, how does the election outcome impact the economic outlook, if at all, for next year, 2025, and even beyond?
Well, the economy right now has good, you know, momentum. We saw that with the recent data for both October, but particularly for the, you know, Q3 GDP growth of 2.8%, good, you know, indications for consumption growth, has strong momentum coming into the fourth quarter. And as I mentioned, part of the rise we saw in yields, the dollar, and equities, you know, from late September through now was reflecting sort of the better economic data. In terms of where do we go from here, you know, no change in sort of policy is going to materialize between now and certainly January 20th and perhaps, you know, many months beyond that. So the economy is really going to perform just based off of, you know, the current momentum it has, easier financial conditions, and certainly expectations for policy changes could lead to, you know, some incremental investment that's been sitting on the sidelines. So there is scope for a bit of acceleration in economic activity. But overall, I think that the economy has good momentum. That should continue. Most of the fiscal impact, I mean, whether it's extension of tax cuts, new fiscal spending, or even tariffs for that matter, won't really start to have an impact until probably about the second half of 2025 or even 2026, you know, given the time of the extending the tax cuts. Now, there is a concern in the marketplace about almost too much of a good thing, meaning, you know, too much fiscal policy. We already have an economy that I would say is warm, not necessarily hot. And inflation and growth are above 2%, which wasn't the case back in 2016 when they were around 2% and trended higher as a result of policy changes. We also have very large deficits and then the total debt is high. So the concern for investors is that if you get too much fiscal policy, that's going to lead to higher inflation, higher interest rates as they price in sort of a term premium, an inflation risk premium, and ultimately that's actually going to lead to lower, not higher growth. You know, maybe not so much in the next 6 months, but if you start to think about later in 2025 and 2026 and beyond. So instead of, you know, the reflation the market's been pricing for, what we get is actually maybe stagnation or even stagflation in the worst case scenario where inflation is high, but growth actually starts to moderate because of the higher rates. Now, I think the fear of this sort of inflationary fiscal, you know, impulse is a little bit overdone. It certainly is a risk, but I think as a baseline assumption, what we can assume is an extension of all the existing tax cuts, which would mean no real fiscal impulse. It just means you actually don't have fiscal tightening. To get much more than that, I think that will really depend on how aggressive the administration and sort of Republicans overall want to be. But I think there's a little bit of, you know, overdone fear in terms of how much stimulus, how much inflation that can cause, and therefore what that means for rates. And the pullback we saw in Treasury yields at the end of last week, after the big, you know, initial pop on Wednesday, perhaps that's a sign that the investors themselves are thinking, all right, you know, they will extend, but they won't add to tax cuts, and therefore that shouldn't necessarily change the overall trajectory of the economy, inflation, and for rates. But time will tell. Again, we need to see the policy details to really start to understand how this could impact the economic outlook beyond the middle of next year.
Okay, so let's now move over to the Fed, as we did have a policy meeting last week. We did see the Fed cut rates by 25 basis points, as was widely expected, and the outcome was relatively uneventful. The focus was on how the election could impact Fed policy, and Fed Chair Jerome Powell was asked as such, what is CIO's expectation for rate cuts in light of the election outcome?
Well, it's rare that a Fed meeting when they're going to be cutting rates is, you know, almost sort of an afterthought, but that's sort of how it sort of played out last week, given the, you know, election outcome and the policy implications there. So it was, as you say, somewhat uneventful. A lot of the focus was on, and questions for Powell during his press conference were on the impact of fiscal policy on monetary policy. Powell did say that, you know, it will take time to analyze the effects, so there's no immediate response. And he was very clear that, you know, we don't guess, we don't speculate, and we don't assume. So they actually want to start to see concrete plans and may not even take, you know, action until legislation is kind of pending so they can understand and model out what are the implications. Now, the reality is they would, you know, as different proposals are in place, they won't wait for legislation to be passed. If it looks likely that something's going to happen, they have to at least consider the scenarios. But in terms of a real reaction function, I think that is probably accurate that, you know, they need to see more definitive what the policy is going to be before they can react. which means that in terms of what is the Fed likely to do, we still think another 25 basis point cut in December is likely, and still expect 100 basis points cut in total for next year. If we look at the outcome from last week, it was a unanimous decision to cut by all FOMC members. So that's a clear sign that they still think policy needs to be eased. Powell kind of alluded to that there's kind of a strong desire not to see any more labor market cooling. It's very gradual, but they don't really want it to see much more. And the fact that they're not going to react yet to any sort of fiscal policy changes means, given the baseline trajectory, they will probably think the economy is going to continue to moderate and therefore it's necessary to cut rates. In terms of something like tariffs, which all sequels tend to be inflationary, the Fed is likely to look through them as well, even if they're announced, because they tend to be a one-off price increase and then sort of inflation kind of moderates from there. It's similar to when there is an oil price spike or if you have temporary price rises because of, say, sort of natural disaster like a hurricane. Again, this sort of reinforces our view that the Fed is likely to cut 100 basis points next year. I think what is probably, even we can say with higher conviction is that, market pricing right now is pretty hawkish. There's only about a 65% probability in market pricing for a December cut. And a little over three cuts in total are priced in, by the end of 2025. And we're basically saying five cuts. So I think the market right now seems to expect a relatively hawkish Fed. So if the Fed sort of cuts close to what we're saying, if the data kind of shows some kind of cooling and the fiscal expansion isn't nearly as much as what investors are assuming, then if anything, I think it leads to scope for the markets and investors being sort of surprised with a dovish, kind of relatively dovish Fed, given current market pricing. Time will tell, but of course, I think the market seems to be a little bit overreacting to the election outcome to thinking this is going to really halt what the Fed does. I think, our view still is that the Fed is pretty committed to cutting rates, maybe at a slower pace, but getting the policy rate back down to around 3.5% by the end of next year.
So, Jason, as we begin to close out, what does this all mean for CIO's investment outlook from here? And what should investors keep in mind when it comes to portfolio positioning?
Well, we can break it down sort of on two different horizons. One is more maybe kind of the very near term between now and year end, and then more another one on sort of a 12-month horizon. In the near term, the momentum in the marketplace that we saw from last week, it certainly can continue, and we kind of a typical year-end run or rally we get in equity markets. There's certainly some scope for that to continue. The markets could continue to price in the Trump trade, as news comes out in terms of officials being sort of nominated and sort of any sort of guidance on policy. But more practically, the markets are likely to be driven by other factors such as the economic data. I think as long as the data is good, it doesn't have to be great for the markets to continue to move higher in the very near term, partly because you have a Fed that's willing to keep cutting rates, and also you have now fiscal policy intended to kind of be supportive for growth. So any sort of weakness, I think the markets will be willing to kind of look through. As long as the data is good, that's sufficient. I think there's, again, the upside surprise for a dovish Fed to actually cut in December and to sort of still guide towards maybe 75 or 100 basis points of cuts for next year at the December FOMC meeting. And then investor positioning, is still going to be a bit of a tailwind. Investors, at least the fast money investors like hedge funds, de-risked going into the election, given the uncertain outcome. They added exposure last week, but I think there's still scope for them to add more based on various positioning metrics. And some way to think of it is that, perhaps they are one standard deviation above kind of average position levels. But by July, in early July this year, they got up to two standard deviations. So there's certainly scope for adding exposure. And we are coming to like a seasonal time of year where corporates do a lot of buybacks. Now the earnings season is largely over. So again, that sort of provides a bit of a tailwind. So there is definitely scope for the market to kind of move higher between now and year end. But that's just consistent with our overall message that there's kind of more to go in stocks. Our December 2025 price target for the S&P 500 is 6,600. Which implies a little bit over more than 10% upside from kind of current market levels. I think the election outcome, though, what it probably will do is pull forward the timing of some of those returns, maybe to the end of this year or into early next year. But overall, again, the story is good upside for equities. Within the sector, we do like things like financials. We think that the regulatory environment, the macro environment will be favorable for financials. But also technology, should get, a benefit from maybe perhaps a little bit lighter regulatory touch, a little bit less restrictions, in terms of M&A activity. It is certainly the case that we saw, people from out of Silicon Valley were, relatively enthusiastic about the election outcome. And on top of this, you still have the kind of the secular AI theme, which we think still has kind of, room to run. On the fixed income side, if it plays out as we expect with the Fed cutting, upwards of 125 basis points between now and year end, that means rates and yields, treasury yields, should probably go a little bit lower rather than higher from current levels. It may take some time for that to happen. And of course, yields could spike higher if there's concerns about fiscal expansion being inflationary. But overall, this is not necessarily a bad entry point to which to add a little bit of your duration, and particularly around sort of the intermediate part of the curve, in between sort of the 5 to 10 year kind of part of the curve. Another asset class that we like is gold. It did sell off last week as perhaps, some of the safe haven flows were taken off a little bit. And then certainly the move higher in rates, all else equal, that tends to be negative for gold. But as rates come lower, as we expect, that should be a bit of a tailwind for gold. And there's also a sort of a strong secular demand, certainly among central banks, to diversify their holdings away from the dollar, and into gold. So we think that that's more of a secular story. And we do think it'll be a bit of a hedge in case of inflation risks do pick up, which is certainly, a possibility in the next few months. So overall, positive outlook that was already in place for the next 12 months, the election outcome, given sort of what we've seen from 2016, directionally that sort of adds to, the upside. Because we also know that, his first administration, President Trump was certainly focused on and paid attention to the stock market. And there you could say there was a bit of a Trump put. So any policies that are viewed negatively by the market, that's a signal to perhaps adjust. So all else equal, it makes the skew a little more asymmetric to the upside for equities versus where it was, this time a week ago. So that's the outlook.
Well, Jason, productive conversation as always. Thank you for dropping by to spend some time with our listeners and our clients to provide some thoughts, takeaways on the implications of last week's election outcome to the economy, markets, monetary policy, and portfolio positioning. Thank you again, Jason.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Again, today we have been joined by Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. For our listeners and our clients of UBS, I do want to highlight Jason's latest blog, which we have been referencing during our conversation today. That title, Reacting Fast and Slow, the blog is now available up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.